When I became a pastor, my birthdays and Christmases kind of just changed, but not for the better, but actually for the worse, not in a good way. My family started to think that because I was a pastor, I would like anything remotely Christian, like just random Christian stuff. One year, this was a real gift. If you've got the Jesus soap, my sister gave me Jesus soap for my birthday. I was like, thank you, I guess. I assume you want me, yeah, being a little naughty, wash away your sins. A little heretical probably, but she thought it was funny. She thought I'd like that. And I was like, that's strange. Is it because I'm a pastor? That's weird. But one of the most classic gifts like Christians get sometimes is the mug. And I hate mugs because I like all my mugs to be exactly the same. Like I want a set of mugs. I don't want 1,000 random mugs. And one of the most classic verse mugs is Jeremiah 29:11. Does anyone have a mug with a verse on it at home? Like, hands up. Does anyone have, a few hands. Yeah. But this verse is so cliche. Like, we kind of forget its deep and rich meaning sometimes because we kind of see it all the time. But let me remind us what it says, 29:11, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future." You know, we put this verse on a mug because it sounds pretty nice. It sounds pretty good. It's really hopeful. It's uplifting. God's got plans. And they are good plans. And even like this verse just taken out of its context, it still brings us hope. But my hope tonight is that we're going to delve into it in its context because I think we can deepen our confidence and trust into God's good plans as we do that. Because I think hope is really a really important thing. Hope that God's got good plans in the future. Hope is a really important thing. I think hope is in short supply in these days. You know, rates of anxiety and depression amongst young people are really, really high. And one of the consistent experiences that I hear and have experienced myself is that feeling of hopelessness, of darkness, where you feel like you're in this deep, deep pit and you just can't get out of it. You might feel like you're overwhelmed. You're feeling the weight of burdens are slowly, you know, dragging you down, crushing you. And the feeling that there is no light at the end of the tunnel. It's just darkness, perpetual, never-ending darkness. A few years ago, I found myself in that kind of place. You know, I left high school and I really wanted to make a difference in the world. I want to make an impact. So I started seeing all these needs around me and I started trying to meet those needs as best as I could. I started to take more and more responsibilities on in the church and I found myself just getting more and more burdened and with that, more and more hopeless. I thought the more I worked, the better things would get for me and the more hopeful I would become. The more I could control, the better things would be because I could control it. But that just led me to neglecting my personal health, my family, my friends, neglecting my relationship with Jesus. And I started to lose hope. Things were not going to plan. Each time I fell short, each time I failed, I would slowly get crushed under the weight of life. You know, you might have experienced this, the things that you used to enjoy, you just don't enjoy anymore. So to fix it, I wanted to work harder. I just did more and more and more, more than I could handle, more than I could sustain. And it wasn't long until my wife came home from work one day and just found me curled up in the fetal position in our couch, on the couch. My mind had just snapped. I had a complete mental breakdown. All I just wanted to do was just end it all and be with Jesus. Hopelessness had run its course in me. I just couldn't go on anymore. I couldn't face the day. I just wanted it all to go away. And in that moment, I realized I needed help. I thought I was a person who was strong, who could get through anything, who could just keep marching on, but I realized I couldn't do it all. I needed help. I called a friend who I could trust. I went to a GP, or got on a mental health plan. I started seeing a Christian counselor. And after years of deep heart work, I started to realize that I found my worth in what I could do. It was all about me and what I could do. And if I wasn't able to live up to the expectations that I wanted, or if life didn't come meet the expectations I wanted, then I was found hopeless. My hope was founded in my own abilities. My hope was founded on if other people viewed me as successful. And so when these things let me down, my hope faded away. And that's why I think we need to pay attention to this verse. Because it shows us how we can have hope even when the circumstances say otherwise. Because Jeremiah is writing this letter to exiles. Chapter 29 is going to the exiles where Daniel and his friends have probably read and seen this letter, received this letter, and they are in Babylon, and that is the great world power at the time. They've invaded Jerusalem. They've carried much of the population into resettlement in Babylon. And the Israelites are taken. Every single aspect of their lives was different now. You know, that firstly, the Israelites, they had one God, but the Babylonians had over 2,500 in their history. Jerusalem seemed like a little country town compared to the gigantic metropolis that Babylon, the Babylonian capital, Nineveh, was. Everything was bigger, busier, louder, more complex. Jerusalem, well, they had the temple. That was the hotspot of God's presence, the place of worship where they could make sacrifices. But in Babylon, there was no temple, not to Yahweh. There was no place to worship God. The Israelites in exile had lost all external supports of faith. And the Israelites were just one group. They were one race. They spoke the Hebrew language. While in Babylon, it was so diverse. There was heaps of languages. Because every place that the Babylonians would conquer, they'd bring back the people to assimilate into their culture and their way of life and their gods. And each group would lose their distinctiveness. They would just be absorbed into the monstrosity that Babylon was. Babylon was reprogramming the Israelites just to be like everybody else. They wanted everyone else to fall in line, serve the empire, abandon everything that made them unique. You know, this would cast massive doubts over the future of the Israelites as God's people. You know, they've just seen the northern kingdom of the Israelites go and just crumble and no longer exist. And now the southern kingdom, Judah. Are they going to share the same fate? They might be wondering. There are these expectations that God would do great things through the Israelites, but how could they? How could they do these good things? Where were these good plans when they are in exile? Because receiving this and reading this letter, though, this would have brought them hope. And it's not just because it's a nice verse for a mug. It would have brought them hope because they saw God had a plan still in the midst of their exile, still in the midst of their hardship. And in this verse, what stood out to me in this passage was there's this two parts of God's plan for them. I want to unpack that for you guys tonight. There's a plan for the immediate, for the short term, and then there's a plan for the future, beyond the horizon plan. The short-term plan, while they are in exile, is here in verse 5 and 7. Build houses, settle down, plant gardens, increase in number. Also, seek the prosperity, the peace and prosperity of the city to which I've carried you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it, for if it prospers, you too will prosper. God's plan was that the exiles would be a blessing to Babylon. God promised to Abraham and to David that the Israelites would be a blessing to the world, the whole world. And even in their disobedience, which had resulted them being taken into exile, God's blessing is still being poured out through them. This isn't because of their faithfulness to God, but it's God is being faithful to his promises. And so the short-term plan is that they need to wake up to the fact that they are living in Babylon. They are living in exile. They can't be in denial, thinking that it's not going to last for very long. It's going to last for 70 years. And we too are living in a type of exile. This is the reality of our situation. We live in a world that too also opposes God, but needs him desperately. Everything about our world seeks to call us away from God. We are surrounded by distractions. Everything is working towards us making a compromise to God's faithfulness, or a compromise to our faithfulness to God, rather. You know, even our own hearts, Jeremiah 17, 9, the heart is deceitful above all things. Even our hearts are prone to distraction, prone to wandering. And the call of Jeremiah 29 is to come to terms with the reality of living in exile and the reality of God's purpose in it. Jeremiah warns them in verse 8, don't listen to the false prophets who are saying not to be a blessing to Babylon. You can't just be a holy huddle, just looking out for yourselves, waiting for deliverance from exile. No, that's not the purpose for this. Not at all. There is a purpose in the present moment of where we're at. And I want to invite Declan up now to share a little bit of his experience up at Teen Street Queensland this year. Come up.
Yeah, I'm Declan. And I'm from the same church as Jordan, and he's just asked me if I can share with you some of my experiences up in Teen Strand earlier this year. So a couple months ago, Jordan asked me if I wanted to come along, and I just found a lot of doors were opening up in my life at that point in time, and I just felt really called by God that this is where he wanted me to go. So I signed up, and I signed up as a coach, and at Teen Street, a coach is just a small group leader. So you're given a group of teens, and your job there is to just build with them in their faith and have these small groups to try and really grow them in their faith. Up at Teen Street, pretty early on in the week, I received a very emotionally heartbreaking message. I'd recently gone through a relationship ending, and that text message sort of brought up a lot of the fears and the doubts that I'd had bottled up inside of me. And I was a train wreck. You know, it was throwing me off my game, those thoughts, and I was making it really hard to focus on the ministry that I was up there to provide to these kids. Up at Teen Street, they've got a pavilion called the Prayer Tent, and I thought, look, it's probably best I deal with this because it's not good to be distracted. So I went into the prayer tent, and Jordan was also there.
It was the only time I went into the prayer tent the whole week.
Jordan prayed for me, and he helped me to understand that the timing of this message was likely no mistake, and that the devil was at play, and that he was trying to sow seeds of doubt and to try and throw me off. And during that prayer, I really felt God was placing in my heart strong visual mental images of Matthew chapter 8, where the disciples are freaking out in the storm on the boat, and also Matthew chapter 14, where Jesus is walking on water. And in those stories, the disciples and Peter, they were distracted by the waves and the wind around them. They were distracted
They were fearful. They saw the power of the wind and the waves, and they were freaking out. Doubt crept in, and faith dissolved for them. They had Jesus right by them. He was physically right by them, and yet still they were distracted. They couldn't keep faith in those moments. And in the same way, I was letting fear control me. I was letting fear come in and distract me from my walk with Jesus. And I just felt that those stories God had placed on my heart to really just sit and reflect on that. The next night, I was at a worship service, and I received another message from the same person, and that was throwing me all off again. I was spiraling down, and inside my heart, inside my head, I could just see myself sinking beneath the waters once again. And it was at that moment where someone in the crowd that was also there, that I barely knew, she came up and just placed her hand on me, right at that moment when I was starting to sink. I barely knew her. I spoke to her maybe once or twice beforehand. And I asked her afterwards, like, why did you do that? Like, how did you know I was struggling? Or, because on the outside, I might have looked fine, but on the inside, I was going through it. She just said that she felt prompted by God in that moment to go and do that. And I don't think she quite understood how much that meant to me. Because in that moment, when she placed her hand on me, it just felt like a reminder from God. Just as God was there when Peter was sinking below the water to pull him out, God was reminding me that he was also there in those moments to pull me out from the waves I was sinking in. I went along to Teen Street thinking I was just there to serve the teens, you know. This is Teen Street, not Adult Street. But a lot of people beforehand had warned me beforehand that you get a lot out of it as well. It's not just for the teens. So I went in cautiously optimistic. But that could not be an understatement. God is working through those moments. And I really feel like God was using that time to speak to me as well. And to use those moments to redefine my faith and help me build in my faith so that I could focus on the ministry I was there for and to try and let go of those distractions and fears.
Thanks, Declan. We can be so focused on where we're going to be next or what's coming up that we can neglect where we are right presently. For the Israelites, they just wanted to be back in Jerusalem. They didn't want to be in captivity in Babylon. They just wanted to be where they were going next. But Jeremiah 29 is a call to be a light of the world right where we are right now. In spite of the world's attempts to reprogram us, to tempt us to abandon God's calling on our lives, living in exile means that we are to be a blessing to the world right where we are. We can't just sit on our hands and wait till we're delivered out of exile. There is a mission, there is a purpose for us right here now. You might really dislike the uni course you're in or the job you're in at the moment or your living situation, and you're just ready to get out and move to the next thing, to go get a new job or just go travel or move out. But maybe God has placed you in there for a reason. In that school, in that uni, in that class, in that subject, because he has plans for you. God has placed you in that sporting club, placed you in that family, placed you in that school classroom, because he has plans for you. I know it can be so tempting just to withdraw from the world, just to keep your head down, protect your own interests. But that's not God's plan for us. God's plan for you is to bless the world. He wants to bless the world through you. You know, you're going to have opportunities to speak words of encouragement and to speak words of truth. Have opportunities to do acts of love and kindness, to demonstrate acceptance to the outcast and to the rejected, to bring healing to the broken. You're going to have opportunities to pray for people, opportunities to talk about Jesus with people, and to bring hope into our world. If we're willing to recognize that God is doing something presently in our exile, that is something that we cannot neglect. So God has plans for each and every one of you. because God's going to bless the world through you. The world's population at the moment is 8 billion and 800 million, I think. I think that's how those numbers work. 8 billion, let's just go with that. And the population of the unreached at the moment, that is 3.44 billion. 3 billion and 444 million, I think. Is that how numbers work? I don't do numbers. 3.4 billion. Let's just go with that. So that means, if you do the maths correctly, I didn't do this math so you can trust it, is that 42.6% of the world's population is unreached. That means that for a population to be unreached, that means that less than 0.1% of people in that population identify with Jesus in any way, or have, and there is no confirmed sustained kingdom movement. There is no opportunity to hear about Jesus. A person who lives in an unreached group will never meet or come into contact with a Jesus follower. They will be born, live their entire life, and die without ever hearing about Jesus. 42% of the world. And the population rate in the unreached is growing faster and faster. And it's faster, it's growing faster than the gospel is going out. And when the gospel goes out, we often think about it in this way. I'm going to do a demonstration for us, okay? When I tap you on the shoulder and I say to you, I give you Jesus, I'd like you to stand up just to signify that you have received the gospel. And I'm going to get Declan, okay? Declan, I need you to time 15 seconds, okay? You tell me when you're ready. And I'm going to see how many people I can convert and share the gospel with in 15 seconds.
Ready, go.
All right, okay, I give you Jesus. I give you Jesus. I give you Jesus. I give you Jesus.
Stop.
All right. Four. Okay, thank you guys. Please grab a seat. All right, this time, what we're going to do is when I tap you on the shoulder and share Jesus with you, I want you to stand up and find someone else and say to them, I give you Jesus. Share Jesus with you. And then they too need to stand up and also find someone else to share Jesus with. And they too need to stand up and find someone else to share Jesus with too. And we're going to see how many in this room we can reach in 15 seconds. All right?
Ready, go.
I give you Jesus. I give you Jesus. I give you Jesus. All right, stop. All right, how many people do we have standing up? 1, 2, 3. That's like, we've reached, yeah, like 90% of the room. Well done, everyone. Give yourselves a round of applause and grab a seat. So when we leave it up to the evangelist, the minister, the super spiritual to reach people for Jesus, it's just not going to cut it. It's just not going to cut it. But when we go by mission through multiplication, we don't need to be a professional. We just need Jesus. And this is how we're going to see the world reached for Jesus. By recognizing that we are in exile and it is for a reason. We have a purpose to bless the world around us. To reach the world. That's part one of God's good plan. The second part is much shorter. So the long-term plan. Let's get back to our passage to find out what that is. We're going to skip down to verse 12. Then you will call on me and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you. You will seek me and find me, and seek me with all your heart, and I will be found by you, declares the Lord, and will bring you back from captivity, and I will gather you from all the nations and the places where I've banished you, declares the Lord, and I will bring you back to the place from which I've carried you into exile. Part two of God's plan for the Israelites is to be delivered from exile, to be brought out of captivity so that they could return to the promised land. After 70 years, the Persian Empire would overthrow Babylon, and they would allow the Israelites to return to Jerusalem, building the walls and rebuilding the temple, and they would return to the promised land. But there is something more significant here that God promises. It's that the people will seek him and they will be found by him. They will seek him and be found by him. As I said earlier, my wife and I recently had our third child. And it is crazy when babies are in the womb. It's an amazing thing, babies in the womb. They wiggle around, they wake up, they go to sleep. They might touch their face with one hand or touch their hands, to hold their hands together. You know, the mother will start to feel the baby kicking them in the ribs, which is quite painful apparently. Or, you know, baby will push off the wall with its feet. You can put your hand on the mother's stomach and you can feel them wriggle around or kick or push up against your hand. Baby will hear mum's heartbeat and will even hear the things outside the body as well, can recognize music and familiar voices. And when the baby is still in the womb, you know, you get to meet this baby through ultrasounds, through little pictures like this. And before this baby was born, my wife and I formed a bond with our child. And they would form a bond with us. We have this connection with this baby, even though they're still in the womb. But we know that that connection doesn't even compare to the relationship we have when they'll be born. You know, to hold a baby in your arms, to look them in the eye, is way more special, but this is still special. Because you can't hold an unborn baby. You can't look them in the eyes. But through a sort of faith, you can have a connection with them. Even though they haven't been born yet, they can still recognize mum and dad's voice. And as we wait in exile, in this life, we have relationship with God. It's real, tangible connection with God. But it's not going to even compare when we are delivered from our exile, delivered from captivity of sin and death, and faith will become sight. We won't need faith anymore because we will see God face to face. And Jeremiah 29:13 says, I will be found by you. And so as you seek him here and now today, he will be found by you. You can have a real relationship with God today. And it's a relationship through faith. But there is going to be a day when that relationship goes from faith to sight. Revelation 21, verse 1 to 4 says, Then I saw a new heavens and a new earth. For the first heaven and the first earth had passed away. And there was no longer any sea. I saw the holy city, a new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride, beautifully dressed for a husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, Look, God's dwelling place is now among the people. He will dwell with them. They will be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. And he will wipe every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. What a glorious day that day will be. We must long for that day where we will be with God in the new Jerusalem, heaven on earth. And this is where we are to place our hope, not in the things of this world that tempt us and distract us, but in our relationship with Jesus. I want to close with this. As we wait until this day, when we are rescued from our exile, remember that God is faithful to fulfill his promises. He has plans for you now, today. He has plans for your life. He has plans for you in the new heaven, the new earth. He is faithful. He will do it. C.S. Lewis says this about our exile. If we find ourselves with a desire that nothing in this world can satisfy, the most probable explanation is that we are made for another world. When we find ourselves unsatisfied with our lives, when our hope is disintegrating before our eyes, remember, we're in exile. And our hope is not in the things of this world, but we are here for a purpose, to be a blessing to our world. But we are made for another world. And in this new world, our faith will become sight. So I want to challenge us with this, that have we become contented with our world? Have we tried so hard to fit into it? We've contorted ourselves like a game of Twister to have one foot in and one foot out. Have we compromised in our faith? Are we so looking forward to what the future might hold in our own lives, what next week or next year might hold, that we are neglecting our responsibilities to be missional right here, right now? Cain challenged us earlier. Who are the people that God has put right before you? What would it look like for you to shine the light of Jesus to them today, tonight? I'm going to give us a moment to reflect. And I encourage you to write something down. Is there a person that you're going to commit to praying for? Someone you're going to send a text to? So I'm going to give us a moment of quiet, and then I'll close in prayer.